Welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the Caramel Kid?
What? Caramel Kid is good. Sean is Sean and Greta doing this podcast at the other end, yeah?
Yeah. We had some child care. Greta is smiling at me. She's in a little like playpen. So we're going to keep this one short because, yeah, Greta's with me today. She didn't go down for a nap.
We have to give her a handle.
We do, yeah. She's Ginger, the Ginger Nut, the Ginger Sprocket. Yeah, she's over here. You can probably hear in the background she's making noises. She's doing some lovely play and she's fine. But, apologies if she is ruining your enjoyment. Not everyone likes babies. I think they're all right, but not everyone does. But anyway. So how have you been? What have you been up to?
Craziness. So my story is a build-up of this guy over a couple of weeks.
Okay. Shoot.
So I'm doing X68 and 4 o'clock, pull up to the second bus stop. There's this guy in a full pilot's outfit. Right. But he must be about 45, but he's got a stick, like a walking stick.
Yeah.
And he never stands at the post, but he always waves his stick out saying, like, making sure I stop right in front of him.
Really? Okay.
But I stop at the post. And he pushes everyone out of the way and gets on the bus. And I was thinking, well, your leg can't be that bad if you push everyone up. And 2 weeks ago, we did this every day because obviously I was doing the same bus.
Yeah.
So he was doing this every day. And he never stand at the post. Yeah. So I was just thinking, okay, this guy's just got issues.
Yeah.
So then last week, I'm doing the X68, but in the morning.
Yeah.
And I see him at a stop and I'm like, bloody hell, bloody, I can't get rid of him. So he does the same thing, and he's pushing everyone out of the way. He gets on, and he always likes to sit in a particular seat.
Yeah.
Which is, like, the first one on the right as you walk in the bus.
Yeah, okay.
So there's a woman in the seat. So he comes along and says, this is what he says. He says, move. He doesn't even say, excuse me, can you move? He just says, move. I was like, what? No. So they start arguing.
Yeah.
And obviously, people are getting on. And I'm laughing because I was, you know, a bit of action. I'm thinking, okay, this is a story. I'm going to carry on. But the time I got to, you know, bus stops ain't that far apart.
Yeah.
So they must be like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Literally, before one bus stop to the other bus stop, there was nearly riot on the bus. It's like, the man was being really abusive, and then he started being really sexist.
No. What sort of stuff was he saying?
He was saying, like, oh, you're about as useful as the shit that comes out of my bum, right? Right?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a bit harsh, but I was just laughing, yeah?
Yeah.
But then he's going, oh, all you useless women are the same. And I was like, whoa. I've got to say something, right? So I step out my cab,
yeah.
And you know when someone makes like a really bad comment, say if it's racist or something,
yeah,
it always stands out. So I get out, and I kid you not, all downstairs were almost virtually women.
Yeah, okay.
I was like, oh man, and everyone was upset. All the women were upset, and we're talking like office middle class sort of people, yeah. And they're all like arguing. They're all like angry. I had one woman standing on a chair, leaning over, ready to stamp on the guy's head. I was like, wow, let's just calm down. Let's calm down, right? So he's trying to argue with all these women, saying, and I'm like, shh. And then I said, look, you want me? They're saying, kick him off, throw him off. And I said, do you want me to call the police? And he pulls out, he says, I'm NATO, right? He says, he pulls out his badge and says, I'm NATO. I says, I don't care what you are. I said, I'll call the police and then dash off my bus. Right?
I'm NATO.
He reckoned he was NATO, right? And I was like, and I'm arguing. And then I was getting angry because he wasn't listening, and he was kept trying to argue with other people. So I'm like, right over him. He says, you need to be quiet. I says, you either be quiet or you're getting off. And I just kept saying it. And then obviously everyone else was like quieting down. And in the end, he said nothing. But after that, I got back in the cab, right, and I'm thinking, bloody hell, it was so tense.
Yeah.
I put all the fans on to like make distraction noises. But it's like the whole, you know, like a class has been told off. That was what the bus was like. Everyone was sitting in silence, but everyone was upset and mad. I was like, shit, I just need to get to Waterloo as quick as I can. Because, you know, on the express, it's like half an hour journey with no stops. Yeah. So it was like half an hour, everyone was just like, huffing.
Yeah. Hoping the man from NATO doesn't go nuts.
Yeah, and then when I got off, when they all started getting off, one woman comes up to me, oh, she goes, yeah, that guy, I think he's a weirdo. He might be like a stripper or a mentally. I was like, what? Because he goes, he always wears the outfit. He ain't no pilot. And I started laughing, right? And then he goes, he definitely ain't NATO.
So if you are a NATO pilot and you're listening, drop us a line. Let us know. Get in touch at letsgetin.co.uk.
Yeah, we want to know who this imposter is. We want to know who this imposter.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I'm off to the Emerald Isle tomorrow with my little leprechaun. We're off to Ireland. We're off to Donegal. I'm racing in a race called the Warriors Run in Strand Hill. So I'm looking forward to that. Should go up against a guy called John Travers, who was into the European Indoor Champs this year for 3K. So he's quick, and it's a mostly road race with one big hill. So that should
be
interesting.
Are you going to put war paint on?
I'm putting war paint on. Yeah, I'm going over there. Causing trouble. Yeah, I'll be wearing my Let's Get Running vest. I was going to say wearing my England vest. I don't think I've got an England vest that still fits me.
I was going to say that. Your pot belly or sort of like poke out the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not wearing an England vest. I'm wearing my Let's Get Running vest. But it should be good. I'm looking forward to that. It should be a good trip. But hey, we shouldn't keep too long. We spoke last week about the interview we got this week with John Alban. And we had a bit of a discussion about taking a different path in your training and taking the Uncommon Golf. So he'll talk a little bit about that. And it's a good interview. Have a listen. He has a very different training approach. He's not necessarily coached. He coaches himself. He doesn't really have a training plan. But have a listen. It's an interesting way of approaching races. And he's definitely a competitive spirit, which is one conversation with Jessamy should have is at some stage a topic is competitiveness bred, or is it, can you build competitiveness, or is it nature? Do you get what I mean? So you're born with competitiveness.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested. I want to hear people's thoughts about that. So the next couple of weeks, we'll do that conversation, because John, kind of speaking of John, made me think a lot about that. So yeah, email us in, get in touch at letsgetrunning.co.uk, or do a tweet at letsgetrunning, tag us in. What do you think? Is competitiveness, can it be bred, or is it basically you're born with it? But hey, so here he is. Let's see him as Greta starts to laugh. Let's listen to John. Here he is. So on this week's show, I'm talking to John Alban. How you doing, John?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. And I was going to start by giving you a long introduction, but it's hard sort of to define what you are, let's say. That's a funny way of putting it. But you do various different sports. Like, let's just say you're an endurance sportsman, I guess is the easiest way to
do it. I think I'm a runner first and foremost, but I like to do a little bit of most sports.
Yeah,
but people have said I'm an extreme runner because I do marathons and things, but really my love is for like slightly more extreme forms of running.
Yeah, and you hold multiple world titles in different sports. What's your current roll call, let's say?
I guess in obstacle racing, I won the obstacle racing world champs 3K and 15K last year. The Spartan World Championships I won last year. And their trifecta world championships too.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit in obstacle racing. But then I have won the world champs the last 5 years in a row in obstacle racing. So maybe that's like a little bit bigger.
And what about the skyrunning as well? You're current title holder for that, aren't you?
Yeah. So skyrunning, I won the ultra distance world championships last year.
Yeah.
And I've previously won the overall world series and they had an extreme world series 2 years, which I won as well. But the biggest one I've won so far, I think, was this year, which was the Trail World Championships.
Okay.
That was like the first World Championships that I've won that's actually sort of probably properly federated and kind of like you're running for Great Britain in colours in the like sort of GB kit and stuff. So that was really fun.
What distance was that?
44K with 2,200 climb, I think.
Okay. And you're off to the world long distance mountain running championships in November, is that right?
Yeah, so we're off to Patagonia in November to run 42K there as well.
how do you decide what you do? Do you have like a focus for the year? Do you think you sit at the beginning of, so I don't know, in January and think, this year I want to do this, this and this. And do you have like a priority, or how do you work out what you're going to focus on?
I don't really know. Everything with my career has always been a bit ad hoc. It's kind of just follow the wave and see where it goes. So normally I get asked to do things, or things take my fancy, and my wife suggests something, and we just kind of go with it. So GB, they picked me for the team, and said, well, they said, do I want to sort of apply? And then they picked me. Yeah. So I went and did that. And then they got in touch again about the Wellington Running World Champs. So I said, yeah, I'll go and do that. So it's kind of like when people ask me to do things, I sort of end up saying yeah.
Yeah. And you just come off the back of winning, was it Tromso Sky Race a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, Tromso is a favourite of mine because it's up in sort of like more Scandinavian and sort of English, Scottish kind of terrain.
Okay.
Whereas a lot of sky running races are down in Southern Europe, where it's a bit more rocky and dry. So to do a race like that up here is really nice.
Yeah, okay. So what do you look for like in an event then? Do you want, like you said, you're an extreme runner. Do you look for the most extreme races? What do you look for? What do you prefer to compete over?
Ooh, I think I like just a good challenge, really. Literally, I could run from anywhere from like 30 seconds up to 24 hours.
Yeah.
I do like slightly shorter distances, like keeping under 5 or 6 hours of running.
Yeah.
Because the further you run, it is just sort of bad for your body, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. And also just the mountain ranges, like different places to go and run. Like there's some really nice places in the world to visit, and to do a race there is a nice excuse to visit. So there's a lot of different things, but it's hard to pick one, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. And then looking back then to the beginning of your kind of love of endurance sports, how did you get back into it? How did you get into sort of running at the beginning of your career?
So I played skate hockey when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Up until I was 20, and then quit and sort of started running just to keep fit. And my sister entered me into a half marathon, and I did Tough Guy.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like the testing yourself side of things was like kind of really appealing.
Yeah,
because I hadn't really done much to note with my life up until then, so it's nice to kind of test myself and to see what I was made of.
How old were you then?
Sort of like 20, 21 or something.
Yeah.
And then I was winning some races because they weren't that competitive.
Yeah.
So then I'd do more of them and train. I just really liked training, really, I think.
Yeah.
Sometimes I didn't even know why I was training. I just really liked being tired. Or something. And then I just did more and more races and just won more and more until I moved to Norway and quit my job in the UK and just didn't get another one. So I just turned full-time when I moved here.
Yeah.
And then started trying to make money from racing instead.
Great. And when you first started there, did you have much advice from anyone? Did you have a structure to your training? Did you go to a club or anything like that? Or you just kind of basically self-taught?
No, I just went out running and did what I enjoyed, I guess.
Yeah.
Commuting to and from work was a big part of my training, so that's like not something you have like much thought about. You just have to do it, don't you, to get in and out of work.
Yeah.
So I ended up actually moving further away from work. So I had a longer commute, so more training. But apart from that, I just did things that sort of like made me tired and I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Okay. It was only when I turned full time that I had to really start thinking about how to train properly, because it's so easy to get overtrained when you have all the time in the world to do it.
Yeah. Okay. And so the things like sort of tempo runs and intervals, when you were, I mean, you were world champion before you left for Norway, right? So were you doing things like that? Were you thinking about sort of structuring your training anyway before you started winning these titles and these races?
Not really. I think my main training really was to and from work, plus a bouldering session or two a week, and then going to BMF. So I think BMF was really good strength training and speed training in itself.
Yeah.
And then that was about it, to be honest. I never really did intervals.
Yeah.
Maybe like once every now and then I'd just go and run like a couple of thousand meters just to try. But I had this thing where I'd always just run really, really hard. So I think I was just pushing myself too hard. So if I did go and do 1,000 meter intervals, for example, I just start really hard and get slower during the session.
Yeah.
And screw myself up a bit. So there was certainly a lot to learn on that front.
Yeah. And so how did it come about then, the Norway move? What made you decide Norway, and why did you do it?
My wife is Norwegian.
Right.
We met and had a long distance relationship between Norway and the UK, and then she moved to study in the UK.
Yeah.
And then she wants to do a master's in Norway, so I moved with her.
Great. And did you know then that what you're going to do? Did you have the intention of going out and trying this kind of full-time athlete approach? Or what was your intention at that stage?
No, when I got here, I just wanted sort of 6 weeks to not do any work so I could like bed myself into a new country, I guess, because it's kind of a big thing for me.
Yeah.
And in that time, I trained a load. And then I went and won the OCR World Champs and the Spartan World Champs.
Wow.
So that prize money was kind of like quite a lot. And during that time, I'd been trying to learn Norwegian, trying to apply for jobs and stuff, but was getting nowhere because it's pretty hard when you don't know the language. So then after those two big wins, my wife just said, well, why don't you just try running for a while? And that's what I did. So I've been running since.
Great. And can you make it work? Is there enough kind of races to keep you ticking over?
Yeah, it means I race quite a lot. I think like last year I did at least 21 races or 22 races or something.
Right.
So to try and make ends meet with the prize money, I have to do a lot of racing, and the obstacle racing does help with that.
Okay.
But then if I do want to go and do things like the Trail World Champs, it's no prize money whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it becomes a lot more difficult. So I'm having to now try and be a bit more business-minded and try and work with sponsors more and make more money through that side of things, so I can relax off the racing, because it's not possible to keep up a career for many years if you have to race that much.
Yeah. And is that the sort of thing difficult? So this is picking from a personal standpoint. I don't like doing the whole social media thing and having to have like to keep talking about myself. And do you find it difficult to do the sort of the work with the sponsor stuff? Is it a challenge in a way to do that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it's hard to deal with sponsors anyway, because, I mean, I only want to wear clothes and use equipment that I really, really think is the best possible.
Yeah.
And those companies aren't often the ones with the biggest budget.
Yeah.
So there's like a not wanting to sell your soul side of things there.
Yeah.
And then with the social media thing, it is really harsh how you can go and win a load of races.
Yeah.
But then just because you haven't got 100,000 likes on Instagram or something, then you don't get anywhere. And you can try and tell people like how much knowledge you have about racing, or how much you can sort of like help people with equipment and racing, and how people like look up to you and stuff. And this, you've got the likes on social media, sometimes it doesn't really matter.
Crazy. But I guess that's just the way of the world these days. So
no, it is indeed.
Yeah, got to put up with it. And then what's thinking about Norway, because Norway's a really interesting country. How is it to training at now? How are you, like, is it quite an easy place for you to be based to run and get sort of good training in?
Yeah, I think where I'm based, it's got not sort of the really, really big mountains that you'd expect from some places in Norway, but it has got really nice mountains, and they're really close to the city centre.
Right.
So that means I've got everything you'd expect from a city, like really good gyms, shops, cafes, a really big airport, and stuff. But then I've also got mountains like right on the doorstep.
Okay.
So I've got pretty much everything you could possibly want, and a lot of really good athletes that live here as well to train with.
Okay. So do you do most of the stuff with other people then?
Not really. I do mostly alone or with my wife. It's nice that if you did want to go and do some sort of mountain session, or you wanted to like talk to someone about training, or just make friends with people, there's a lot of people with the similar interests.
Yeah. And how does it work? So, I saw something that there's no coach, you have no coach, and you have no training plan specifically. How do you work out your training, especially because you're doing kind of these different, you're doing the OCR, you're doing the Spartan stuff for whatever reason. Well, how do you work out, and how do you train for that? What's your approach to training, let's say?
Well, I have like a training ethos, which is to do intervals and tempo runs and strength training sessions and sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I just make them up myself, I guess, and just kind of try and feel how my body feels.
Yeah.
And then try and think what I need to do to improve it.
Yeah. Okay.
So I like follow the same sort of system that most other people would, like mostly slow training and then some harder sessions, maybe two or three a week.
And where did you learn that then? Where did you pick up that knowledge? Just from trial and error, or did you read books and
I guess talking to people, reading books, trial and error, everything kind of like figures into making it what it is, really, because it is kind of like, it's strange to train in such a weird all-round way, because I've got nothing specific to train for.
Yeah.
If I was training for like a marathon on the road, I'd know exactly what pace I want to do and go out and know exactly how long I want to spend at that pace and really can then try and build on that week on week.
Yeah.
But the races I'm doing, they're so random. It's kind of I just need to construct on this all-round fitness.
Okay.
Try and make myself as fit as possible. And then 3 weeks before the race, think, okay, I'm going to run on a similar sort of terrain at a similar sort of speed to what I'll be doing in the race, and then try and angle my body towards that race.
Okay, right, wow. So see, that soon before, sort of a couple of weeks and then an easy week before the big race.
Yeah, or even before the Trail World Champs, I kind of did it slightly the other way.
Yeah.
Because I hate to sit on a start line and be completely fresh.
Yeah.
So it's nice to sometimes have a rest week and then add in quite a bit more load and then maybe a day or two with a lighter load before the race.
Okay.
So that way you kind of like get to the race with just the right amount of stiffness in your body, so you're not too fresh.
Yeah.
And not too tired.
And that's how you do it. It's quite like how do you then, if you're doing, you said that 21 races last year, obviously you can't every week ease down or, you know, do 3 weeks of specific training for each of those events. Do you have like seasons and stuff? Do you have like priorities in the year where you want to be running, you know, specific big races and you want to have that specific training? Or how does that work? So if you've got like the Trail World Championship, but also the next week on, you've got another OCR race. Do you prioritize different things throughout the year?
Yeah, I definitely prioritize certain races as being bigger than others.
Yeah.
And then some races are just kind of more like training races, I guess, even though they can be kind of important, but you have to get good at training up to a race and not worrying that you're going to be too tired or too stiff.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing now is I don't run at all in the winter.
Okay.
So my body gets a really nice rest, and all I do is ski, and I do like many more hours in the winter of training on the skis than I would in the summer running.
Okay. Yeah.
So it really feels like my body's
with the sort of having to keep that level of fitness quite high. How do you recover? How do you take a break? And it's the skiing.
Yeah, so it's really low impact, and I can do many, many hours, and it's really fun as well. So it's not possible for everyone to do, but if you can go out ski touring, cross-country skiing is a great way to cross-train during the winter.
Yeah,
and it does feel now, taking like 2 or 3 months off running, it feels like I could, my body's like actually recovering, rather after 5 years of just running. You kind of get this kind of swelling in your body where you just feel tired all the time.
Yeah,
you don't realize it because that's just how you've always felt.
Yeah.
Whereas once you actually take 3 months off, you realize how your men are feeling. It's like, oh, wow, I was like,
it's almost like to be a human being.
Screwed up. Yeah, practically. Yeah. So it's really nice to do that. The most important thing is how you start running again.
Yeah.
And you can have like a system of upping it by 7 or 10% a week and be really careful. But the best thing to do is literally just listen to your body. Like, go and do some drills on the track or maybe 1 or 2 intervals or something. And then just go home and do some like light stretching and some stuff and just see how your calves feel afterwards. Because it's so easy just to destroy your calves immediately when you start running again.
Do you find that hard mentally? Because I remember I was out in Ethiopia and I was chatting to this guy. I think he's 205 running, called Sisai Lema. And he said that his system for training was he'd run a marathon, obviously pretty well, 205 is pretty quick. And then he'd have a couple of months off completely, or he might have even said 3 months off completely. And then he would do a month of jogging and then a month of hard training at the back of a group. And then 1 month of really hard training where he really went for it. But for me personally, I don't think I could mentally be able to switch off that much. And also I'd struggle coming back, not being in the shape that I wanted to be in. Did you find that a struggle? Certainly initially when you started doing, sort of having the winter off with the skiing, did you find it hard to kind of switch off and just not to run?
Kind of in a way, and in another way not, because running is my job now, so it kind of you need to keep the enjoyment in it, and if you're having to do it all the time, it starts to lose its enjoyment. So then being able to take this break in the winter actually feels kind of more natural, because then when you come back to it, you remember why you enjoy running, and your body feels like it wants to run rather than having to make it run when it doesn't want to.
Right, okay.
So I think that's gone really well, but I think the enjoyment thing is massive for me, so just making sure that I actually enjoy it. So if I was on such a strict regime as what he was on, of being like having to take time off because I've done a race, not because it's snowing, it's really hard to go out running.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd really manage, to be honest. I love to run, so just to sit down and do nothing would be awful, but it's just nice that now I love to ski as much as I love to run. So in the winter, it makes sense to go skiing, and in the summer, go running.
Yeah, and also you see, like people like sort of Killian is he, that's the kind of his approach that he takes as well, isn't it? He has mostly doing the winter is for skiing and stuff. So you're doing a similar approach to one of the best trail athletes in the world, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. The only big problem with Killian is he just seems to be inhuman in the fact that he can do so much load.
Yeah.
So he can run so much, and there's a lot of athletes, myself included, that would look at his training and think, oh, I need to do like that. And yeah. then after 2 or 3 weeks, completely burn out.
Yeah.
And you need to find the right balance for you. And I found slightly less load for me is maybe a good thing. Okay. It's going up every year, but it's still nowhere near the levels of what Killian can train.
Nice.
Because my legs would just fall off after 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So
I read some of the your longest training run is 20K. Is that correct or?
Nah, there must. I must have done at least like in the past years upwards of like maybe 20 to 30K. I guess, especially there must be longer ones in there, but they normally have a lot more climb than you'd expect. So maybe 20K can take 6 hours.
Okay, so I was going to say with things like the Trail World Championship, were you out doing sort of 6 hour runs, or are you more sort of keen to have an overall consistent level of running rather than these kind of big, heavy kind of sessions?
Yeah, I think my biggest training run for Trail World Champs would have been 75K, but that was Transvulcania, the race.
Okay.
So it's not really a long, slow run, training run. It was like an actual race.
Yeah.
And it probably, if I could really like just do a few races a year, I probably wouldn't have done it.
Okay.
So it's nice to use races to get you ready for other big races.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Yeah. So is it, that's an approach you take, sort of using the session. A lot of these races become training, really.
Yeah, I have to, really, because otherwise it is really hard to get in shape, because you can always do more than you think.
Yeah.
It's hard to make yourself push as hard as required in training in order to get the fitness benefits. So sometimes you do just need to go out and push really hard.
Yeah.
And a good race is a good way to do that, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you have kind of any, obviously because you are doing OCR, which a lot of runners don't really have much of a knowledge of, do you have like any kind of, weird and wonderful ideas for training, that kind of specific fitness? Do you do anything like any kind of, sort of different runs, weighted runs, that sort of thing? Do you do anything sort of different that you could advise someone who might fancy giving an OCR a try?
I think I have done in the past, but I don't think it's necessary.
Right.
The main thing with obstacle racing is the fact that there's some obstacles now which are very technical, so you have to hang from your hands and like do things.
Yeah.
So I think going climbing or bouldering is like really good to build up your grip strength.
Right.
And if you go running and go bouldering, that's pretty much all you need, I think, in order to be able to do obstacle races well. The other thing is carrying stuff, and I think for some reason I just be able to carry stuff well.
Yeah.
I put it down to when I worked for FedEx for 5 years when I was a kid.
Oh, really?
So maybe that's why all this moving of boxes maybe was what gave me a base for carrying things. But
yeah.
if you can carry things, if you can pick something up,
yeah.
moving it is cardio. So training, your running is sort of cardio anyway. So
yeah.
The strength training you do for running and running training going bouldering really is the main things that I do. Maybe I'd carry things once or twice a year just to carry it. But then again, I do obstacle races where I carry things in the race anyway. So that's kind of training for other obstacle races.
Yeah. So if you're a young teenager thinking about entering OCR, get a job as a removals man. Might be a good
I guess so. But the main thing when you're young, I think, is to not get injured. So
yeah.
if you pick like a really specific goal, like wanting to be a 400 meter runner,
yeah.
you train so specifically, I think it's really boring and it's just more likely to get you injured.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think just to go and do loads of different types of running and loads of different types of activity, and just if you're not having fun doing it, then don't do it, because you're probably getting injured.
Yeah.
And yeah, go and work for FedEx.
Yeah, and obviously you having managed to win across different disciplines, so sky running and OCR and Spartan races, and then winning that the Trail World Championships. How do you? You're obviously a competitive person. Like, I was going to ask a question. How do you hone your mental game? Which is probably a bit broad, but do you Do you pride yourself on your mental strength? Are you able to really dig deep in competition? What's the key to your competitiveness, do you think?
I'm not sure if I'm really that mentally strong, but that's because I know all of my faults and what I'm thinking during races.
Yeah.
But from the outside, I mean, my dad always says that I don't really win so much with running skill. It's more about heart. I run with heart a lot.
Yeah.
So I think I do manage to push maybe, and I don't give up, and I just sort of grind through.
Where do you think that's from then? Do you think that's just part of your character, or do you think that's something you've developed?
Maybe part of my character. I mean, when I used to play skate hockey as a kid, yeah, I was always the smallest out there, but I was the one that was never giving up. So even if I like lost my stick, I'd still be crawling around on my knees, kicking the ball with my feet and stuff, and like just not giving up. So maybe that's just transferred over into running.
Yeah. And how do you say people don't know what's going on in your head? How do you then, with these negative thoughts, how do you shut those out? Are you able to shut them out subconsciously, or do you have strategies for telling yourself to shut up and get on with it?
I don't think I really have strategies, but I've tried to make some. I think maybe to like read more psychology books would be good. But
yeah,
really, I think it's just, especially at the beginning of the race, it's so hard at the beginning because you're not tired yet and you're wondering whether you can keep this pace up and all these thoughts are going through your mind.
Yeah.
But really, you just have to shut off and just run and then not worry about anything else. And then by halfway, I'll probably be enjoying myself, and then just like I'll be in the flow.
Yeah.
It's more at the beginning that it's kind of like you just want to be at halfway and be in a bit of pain and be pushing, so you know that's how much you have that day, not like be wondering what's going to happen in 2 hours' time.
Yeah, yeah. I always think this in every race, every person will go through a bad patch. So if you're going through a bit of a bad patch, you think it's not going to last forever. You're going to get to a point, you're going to get to halfway, and things might be completely different. You know, the races never pan out completely the same all the way through, so it's just kind of a case of gutting out until it that point, like you say, when you get to halfway and you know exactly what's going to happen.
It is true, but then when you are racing like the highest level, it literally is extremely painful, because it's not like a road marathon where you know you can set X pace, and once you're missing your paces, your kind of body's tired and things are happening and stuff. If you've got like three big climbs in a race and you have to push yourself really hard and run downhill as hard as possible, there's like obstacles and obstacle racing and everything sort of like really screwed up, you've got no real time to think whether you're tired or not, you're just pushing all the time, and it is just really painful.
What do you think is your main strength? As I say, obviously you're able to deal with the pain, but do you think you have a major strength that makes you able to compete? Is your climbing a particular strength? Is it something technical, or is it that hard, like your dad said, that makes you the runner you are?
I'm not sure. I think in obstacle racing, it's the fact that I can run into an obstacle, do it, hit the ground, and then run away really fast. So I don't waste much time in this in-between when you get to the obstacle, when you leave the obstacle.
Yeah.
So I think maybe I can run quite fast with a lower heart rate than some people.
Right.
So when I get to the obstacle, my heart rate spikes. It doesn't put me up into sort of like max.
Right.
Maybe. But then with actual running races, I think I'm just... I've got quite a good engine, and I've got a semi-okay stride, and I can just kind of like power through maybe.
Yeah, and I guess that similar skill from the obstacles could be the same in terms of you in races, like you're having to climb for periods and then you're on a flat, and if the terrain is very varied, then that feeds into that same skill.
I think so, and I also think that I'm good at dealing with things that just aren't quite right, so like stones in your shoe or being dehydrated or this or that. There's always something that's not quite right in a race, and some races will be completely put off by it, and they won't be able to continue. Like there's a sky racer, a Russian guy, and he broke his pole on an uphill, and then that's it. He stopped. He said, "Well, I can't go uphill without my pole."
Really?
So I'm like the complete opposite of that. I was just like kind of like, you can run me through fire, through a river, tell me to jump over a gorge, and it's kind of like I'll just get on with it. Whereas a lot of runners would be like, "Oh." Yeah. I didn't realise there was going to be a river crossing. My feet are going to get wet. I haven't prepared for it.
I can't have my same breakfast this morning as I had last week. So therefore,
it's like, oh no, the hotel's ran out of pasta the night before. It's like, what am I going to do? Whereas I think I'm a slightly little bit different in the sense that I just think, okay, it doesn't really matter. I'll just get on with it.
And does that adaptability go as far as nutrition? Are you? Do you think a lot about how you fuel yourself and how you... both in the race and before races, are you quite structured in terms of that way, or are you quite adaptable?
I think I'm getting more structured. I've certainly found that gels like really, really help.
Right.
So, but that's a kind of like not a secret, is it? But no. I think having a gel, a good thing I did for the Trail World Champs actually was to have an alarm on my watch, and it beeped every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So every 10 minutes, no matter what, I had a sip of water.
Yeah.
And then every third beep, I had a gel, so every 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So it was really good just to have this, because when you do hit a climb, it could be that 40 minutes goes by and you've just been mind on what you're doing, or you hit a downhill and you could go an hour without even thinking because you're just concentrating on running downhill and you haven't drunk or eaten anything.
Yeah.
Whereas having this alarm on your watch kind of keeps you into a little bit of a rhythm. So it just reminds you that no matter what you're doing, it's important to take care of your body.
To refuel. Yeah, absolutely. And looking ahead to the season, so you've got obviously the long course mountain running championship in Patagonia, which is going to be exciting to visit. Like, have you got any burning ambitions both for this year and for futures? Is there any big races you want to do or anything you want to achieve in the next few years?
I don't know, really. I mean, I've got two big obstacle races left this year, the OCR World Champs and Spartan World Champs.
Yeah.
And then the big one is the Sky Running final in Le Mans in Italy. So I've got my four races now. I'm sitting in third at the moment. So it's a big ask to be able to hopefully win there, and then the other athletes ahead of me to come sort of like beneath the podium maybe.
Yeah.
And then the Mountain Running World Champs. There's only four races left this year. So this year I really have raced less.
Yeah.
I've tried to get my shape better for those races.
Yeah.
But moving forwards, I mean, I've got a big multi-stage race next year, Audio Events. It's going to be like really fun. It's like a new race in France.
Yeah.
So that'll be a new challenge for me, racing over multiple days. But apart from that, it'll be the same kind of going with the flow, just seeing what looks fun and taking on new challenges.
Yeah, and you don't fancy a switch over to like a more traditional running event, which could get you, you know, things like aiming for Olympics and the marathon or something like that. You don't fancy that kind of drastic change in your focus?
It would be fun, but I think also I'm probably a bit late at 30 to try and really angle my fitness to one specific thing.
Right.
And also that's not really something I really want to do. I mean, I don't think I'd want to be an Olympian that can run 400 meters but not 10 kilometers, or can run a marathon but not like lift anything, or I don't really want to like specify my fitness in any one thing. And pretty much most of the Olympic sports, I mean, things like triathlon is a bit better, or pentathlon maybe, but it's kind of like it's very specific, and that's not really what I think is being healthy for humans. It's not really that fun to train for either.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it makes sense. So Norway is good for you to stay in for a few more years yet?
Yeah, I think Norway is it's a really nice place. They've got a great way of life, even the people that aren't professional athletes. They love to just, they don't do overtime if they're not going to get paid for it, and they love to go out into the mountains. And I'm not sure if I'll stay in actual Bergen. There are really nice mountain ranges in Norway that I could go and live in, which would be nice, but we'll see. And at the moment, I'm just really happy.
Great. I forgot to say earlier at the beginning when we were chatting, but I went to a wedding in Norway in the south and west. I can't remember the name of the place. Skien, I think it was. And unfortunately, they started the wedding. It was a whole day of speeches, and they said we're going to have about 6 hours of speeches, but unfortunately, this is the last time we're going to talk in English. So we just have to listen. But actually, it's such a lovely sounding language, isn't it? The almost the cadence of it is so nice that you can kind of just, it doesn't really matter. It's not a harsh language to listen to. So yeah, but a good spot. I'd like to go and be in Norway for a bit. And I've got one question I've got written down here, but it's a bit of a strange one. But like in 60 years, obviously you're doing fantastically well now. Like in 60 years, when you finish a career and it's long gone, how would you like to be remembered, if you care about that sort of thing at all? How would you want people to view you in your career in 60
Ooh.
Years
then? I'd like to think that people would think of me as I was like one of the best earliest obstacle racers, because I know obstacle racing isn't the most competitive of sports, which means there are, in the future, it's going to be way more competitive and way harder to get the titles that I have.
Yeah.
But it'd be nice to think that people would think back when I was like one of the first people that really, really was good.
Yeah.
Because it's hard. You can win all the races in the world, but unless you just sing about yourself, like the Americans are really good at it. You can go to America and win a race there, and they won't care or tell anyone. They'll just talk about the American that was there.
Really?
So yeah, so it's hard because I'm not the sort of person which likes to like really shout loads about how well I do and stuff. But it would be nice if I was kind of remembered as a bit of a legend in the obstacle racing world. And in mountain running and sky running, I still don't think I'm at the highest level now anyway. So,
right.
I want to sort of improve and try and get into that top bracket, I think. I still think there's people better than me out there, but that's also fun.
Yeah.
Because it means I'm just going to have to try and keep getting better.
Yeah, take them down. Yeah. And I was going to say about the UCR, the Americans are quite good at doping, aren't they? Hasn't there been some high-profile cases of...
I don't know. The whole doping thing, that's like a whole podcast in itself.
Yeah.
It's really hard because doping, even taking energy gels during a race is practically doping. It's just a legal form of doping.
Yeah.
So there's like a whole scale of doping. Taking vitamin tablets is doping. It's just
caffeine's
legal.
Doping.
Caffeine definitely is like the biggest like drug enhancing, sport enhancing drug ever.
Yeah.
But I like to try and sit really low on that doping scale. Obviously, I take gels when I race.
Yeah.
But in my everyday diet, I don't think I'd really take is iron when I go to elevation.
Yeah.
So apart from that, pretty much I just eat food. Yeah. I try and eat low processed food, but that's something I fail upon. And I eat a lot of like heavily processed food like Nutella and pizza and stuff. But it's hard because like even breathing pure oxygen apparently isn't doping.
Yeah.
But it's insane that there's like people have such, it's upsetting in one way, but then also I just try not to care in another. And the sports I do, they involve quite a high level of skill as well. And that's something that's hard to dope.
Yeah. Okay.
So hopefully it affects results a little bit less.
Yeah, absolutely. But hey, we won't get onto doping too far. We'll be here with that. I've got three quick fire questions that we ask all the interviewees that we speak to. And the first one is, if you could be anywhere running now, anywhere in the world, or even a race you want to go back to and redo, anything, anywhere you could be running right now, where would it be?
Ooh, I just actually returned on my way back over from Europe. We drove by Romsdalen, where Killian lives in Norway.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of places there I'd like to go and run. So probably a little bit further up on the west coast in Norway, there's a lot of ridges and stuff I'd like to be running at right now.
Nice. Second question is, can you recommend us something? Because it could be like a book you've read that's inspired you, film, podcast, anything physical or an experience you think our listeners should try.
The last book I bought about training that I bought is called Uphill Athlete.
Yeah.
So it's training for the uphill athlete, and it's like, it's not a book which has got like 5k plans to get you quicker at 5k or 10k or a marathon or something. It's aimed at people that run in the mountains or ski in the mountains that just want to get better, like mountain running sports, which is, there's not that many books around like that. And it goes into everything from, how the body works so it gets fitter to different training you can do to strength training and stuff. So it is a really good book, and there's a lot of input in there from a lot of good athletes.
Great.
And it's quite a Bible, I think.
What's it called again? Uphill? The Uphill Athlete?
Training for the Uphill Athlete.
Okay. Right.
Killian's mentioned a lot in it, but it's by, I think, Steve House and Scott Johnston.
Okay, great.
Two American guys, I think. I'm not sure. But there's a lot of good information there, and it's a really good book.
Great. We'll put a link to it on the show notes, actually.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And the final question is, in your opinion, what do you think has been the greatest endurance performance of all time?
Oh.
And you can interpret that any way you want in terms of endurance.
I couldn't even think, to be honest. I don't really follow that many athletes, to be honest. It's hard to really see, but
what's inspired you then? What kind of race recently?
Well, the thing is, I've never really followed many athletes, and part of it is because of the whole doping thing. Because if you have like a big idol, likelihood is they're going to get taken for doping and it'll be really crushed. Yeah. Or if you have a big idol, it's really hard to go and beat them.
Yeah,
but I guess Killian is someone that I've like looked at for the past 5 years and just thought he's just generally. He's not normal physically or mentally. The fact that he can just keep finding new challenges for himself and doing stuff.
Yeah.
And just to name some of the stuff he's done, like even in the last year, it's just stupid. Like going out and skiing 23,400 meters of vert or something it was he did in 24 hours.
Wow.
So up and down in 24 hours, like over 23,000 meters, I think he did. It's just,
Yeah.
It's insane that he'd even want to go and do that. Like, I'd want to do 6 hours and spend the evening with my wife. But he's like, no, no, I'm going to go up and down for 24 hours. So it's just crazy how he can force himself, how he wants to do that, and how his body can do that. Because, I mean, just to go up and ski 1,000 meters up and down in an hour is a big challenge for most good athletes, let alone nearly averaging 1,000 meters an hour for 24 hours.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah, I'm not going to be trying it. I can't even ski, so then that's me ruled out. Yeah. Lovely. Well, thanks very much, John. Thanks for chatting and good luck. Hopefully, I'm trying to personally qualify for the short course mountain race in Patagonia. So
cool.
Yeah, it's gonna be a challenge. I think there's a few too many guys that might take me down, but I'm trying to do it in over here in Amsterdam. So everything I'm doing is on the treadmill. So it's gonna be a really hard. But I think I've got an outside chance of making the first four.
Sounds good. I've actually done a lot more treadmill running. I've never actually done treadmill running before this year, and I think it's helped a lot. So I'm sure you're going to be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, you can at least you can set it there. You can run for you know an hour, or whatever, a good the right kind of trajectory and stuff. So at least it's controlled, I guess. But yeah, we'll see.
Sounds good.
Hopefully, we'll bump into each other for that race. But if not, good luck for it, and fingers crossed you have a good rest of the season.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Great stuff. So nice to chat to John. Good luck to him for the forthcoming races he's got coming up. Hopefully I'll bump into him. I'm looking forward to that. If I can make the British team for the mountain running, I'll be on the same squad, which would be interesting. But hey, what about the news? Should I do a bong?
Then you can do all the interviews. You can interview them all when you're there.
I will. It could be months of content. And it'll only be interesting to mountain runners. But anyway, we like to keep things varied on this show, not just one style of runner. So track, field, whatever, we'll get them all on. But we should do some news before Greta has a meltdown. Should I do a bong?
Right, go on then.
Okay, bong. The first one. This is Dutch news, right?
Sounds awful. Bong. Go on,
The first one. Two Dutch athletes who are going to be going. One of them was going to go to the World Championships in Doha for the 400 meter relay. She's called Madia Gafoor. I'm still bad with the Dutch. And a guy called Rolf Baumeister. They've been arrested. Yeah. They've been arrested by Hungarian police for drug dealing.
What would you believe it?
So these guys have been dealing meth and stuff, and they've been arrested. German police, they found that a vehicle these two athletes in, these two sprinters, was carrying 29 pounds, 13 kilograms of crystal meth and 43 kilograms of ecstasy, and as well as 12,000 euros cash.
Well, that definitely is not sports enhancement, but maybe it's sports funding.
Yeah. So both fellas are in custody. They're funding their track and field through dealing a bit of the old drugs, only
it's
in the Netherlands.
Crack cocaine funding. I'm going to get on that.
Yeah. They're a crack team of sprinters. Yeah. So anyway, that was good. That was good news. I'll do another bong. Bong. The Birmingham Diamond League was on. It was boring. It was nobody in the stadium. Why have England got two? I guess because we got loads of sponsors and loads of money, but we have 3 days.
Also, there's people knowing the stadium because it used to be one day. And everyone used to go. Then they try and, because they want to make more money, they spread it out.
Yeah.
And it's like 20, 30 pound a ticket over 3 days. It's like, it's just a hassle.
Yeah.
They should just put it back to the one day.
Was Birmingham two days though? Birmingham was only one day, wasn't it?
I don't know about Matt. It's just stupid.
Yeah. They're 2 days for London, 1 day for Birmingham. Are you fleecing us fans, British? I don't know who organised it. British Athletics have got to have something to do with it. It just seems, crazy. I agree with you. Too many days, too much stuff to pay for.
And the price is up.
Yeah.
It used to be like, you know, £10, family and friends get a free ticket.
Yeah.
Now it's like everyone's like £30.
Yeah. Get the local kids in there. That's what they should do in Birmingham. If they're not going to sell the tickets, get loads of local kids jumping in and making a bit of an atmosphere. But
or just do what they did in China. Just got people off the street to sit one seat apart to make it look busy.
So do that. There was some good racing there. There was Klosterhalfen. We talked about her before. A German running. If you ran a good race, she got the win in the mile. There was AJ Wilson, 800 metres. She ran pretty well. The one person we will mention, though, is on the men's side. Is it Craig Engels? He won the mile, 330. Oh, no, the 1500 metres, 335. And his hair is bringing it all back. It's like You know Jason Donovan back in Neighbours in the 80s? It's a perfect mullet. Check it out. If you don't know him, if you don't know Craig, check
it out. He weren't a crazy one. He said the perfect mullet, you know, the perfect, I like that.
Yeah. And the big race, the 800 metres with your coach's son in it. What a win from the Irishman, Mark English, from Donegal, where I'm going now. He won it, didn't he? Come from seventh to first in the last 100 metres.
Yeah, it was almost like a British champs because there was like so many Brits in it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was obviously good race, solid.
And your mate didn't do so well. Did he say why?
He did okay. Obviously, I think he's got a bit of jet lag and stuff. So
yeah, yeah. He just didn't quite feel it.
But yeah.
Yeah, Jane. That's the end. That's it. That's all we can say about Birmingham. Bong. There's not a lot of news going on. But anyway, that. There's plenty of stuff coming up. There's more championships coming up, so we'll have more news for you. But we should before we go, before Greta goes a bit nuts, give us a review. We love it if you subscribe to the show because then you get it every single week. We'll try and keep things fresh. Get in touch with us. Like, well, we'll put that things on Facebook, sort of what we got coming up. So we've got some good interviews with Phil Hurst. So I'm going to be talking to Phil in the next couple of days. He is on the UK Anti-Doping Board as the education representative. He is the lead lecturer in sports psychology at Canterbury University. Greta's making loads of good noises. And he's recently done a study about nocebo and placebo effects, right? Of ergogenic aids. Ergogenic aids mean loads of stuff from like gels to EPO. And he's going to talk about that. That's going to be really interesting. So like how those, if you believe in those things, if you believe in EPO, it's going to work. If you don't believe in EPO, it won't work. But we'll chat to him about that.
I doubt that, because if you don't believe in EPO and you still take it, it's going to work because physically it still has an improvement.
Yeah, but he says it'll work even more if you believe in it. So no one's taking EPO here, but if you take a gel and you believe in the gel, it's more likely to work. But he'll describe all when he gets back
to it. So basically you're trying to say it's mind over mouth, regardless of if it's legal or illegal.
No. I'm not saying they get the same benefits, but it will be more powerful if you believe it's good. Right? So EPO is going to have more benefit than a Morton gel. But if you believe a Morton gel is really good, then a Morton gel will have more benefit than if you don't believe it's good. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But that basically means everyone's going to force themselves to believe stuff are good.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. Force yourself to believe it. Force yourself. Anyway, we'll chat to Phil about that. Give us some questions. If you've got any about anti-doping, he can probably attempt to answer them.
Hey.
Yeah, Greta's got to go. Right, so we're going to head off. Yeah, we love your reviews. We love everything like that. And any feedback and stuff. Get in touch at letsgetround.co.uk. Right, Jermaine, enjoy your weekend.
See ya.
I'm going to win that race, come back with some tails. And hopefully hopefully NATO man's not on your bus tomorrow.
If I see him, I'm driving past the stop. That's it.
Yeah. Nice one, Jermaine. See you later.
See ya. Bye.